Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us today. In studio with us is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis, and we'd love to have your questions for him during our next half hour. You can phone those in to 496-1999. You can email your questions to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Let me start with something that's going to come up actually this coming Monday night in both the West Lafayette City Council and the Lafayette City Council, which is the League of Women Voters are going to make presentations in one night to both city councils advocating for a nonpartisan redistricting commission. And this is something that a summer study committee in the legislature is already looking at, something that Speaker Brian Bosma has said he might be able to get behind, something that six states have already done in a nonpartisan way. Do you think it's going to matter that the League of Women Voters are asking the city council presidents to go to the legislature and say, hey, we're behind this thing?
Hi, Stan. First off,
hi.
Great to be here today. I think it does. You know, I think a lot of our state representatives have told us time and time again that they want to hear from us. They want to know what's going on in their local governments and in their jurisdictions. And in this particular issue, I think it's an issue that resonates with our state folks. I think that they understand that there has been some things that have been done over the past several decades that in some cases, since the state's population has sort of shifted, doesn't necessarily represent the core population that they've intended. And it's through these kind of conversations and through this overt dialogue through a lot of local governments that they're going to get a little bit wiser on it. And this process, it's actually been very well thought out. Our representatives through the league here in Greater Lafayette have done a great job in informing the public. And our councils on both sides of the river are going to make that presentation this Monday night so that we will even further that conversation and discussion.
Is it your thought that the opinions of the state lawmakers will be changed more if they are heard, if the city council presidents are heard from, or do they really want to hear from mayors like yourself? I mean, does it matter where they hear it from one way or the other?
No, I don't think so. Depending upon your jurisdiction, sometimes you have weak mayors and strong council presidents, and then the inverse is also applicable as well. But one thing that we found dealing with our folks when we have local issues that we want to get their attention on, they are responsive to our needs. And one of the coolest thing about our representatives that they're from here and they take great pride in their communities and they react to what we're asking for. One of the bigger challenges that we have is we're trying to make sure that we don't lose some of that local control when it comes to state intervention. We've always been very strong on what we do here in Greater Lafayette and being proud of what we do. And they're at times, sometimes we sort of flounder in dealing with our state folks when it comes to trying to figure out why in some instances we lose some of the control that we've had. And in other instances, some of the control that we've had not only gets taken away, but it gets reinterpreted at the state level.
What is your personal opinion of the idea of a nonpartisan body drawing boundaries for the state house, state senate, Indiana's congressional districts? It doesn't affect the local level so much, at least not in an immediate sense. And we'll get to how it might actually affect you in just a minute. But are you generally in favor of switching from the way we do it now, which is whichever party is in power just after the 10-year census gets to draw the lines? What's your thought on which way it should be done?
Well, definitely bipartisan. I think that's the best way to get anything done.
Let me ask real quick. Bipartisan or nonpartisan?
Bipartisan.
So you want both parties to be involved, but
yes.
Does that mean you're not in favor of the nonpartisan commission?
Well, I just think that you have to look at the battlefield, I guess, is the best way to put it. And you have to look at the best way to get it done. And I think the best way to get it done, and again, in my 9 years now of elected experience, bipartisan is always better than nonpartisan, because that way you can get buy-in from both parties and you're going to have a lot more involvement from both parties. The biggest challenge that we have specifically with this issue is the conversation is generally very civil and very, very pointed. And it when it leaves the local area, sometimes it gets a little tweaked, and that's when we have some concerns.
What do you mean when you say tweaked?
Well, that's when there are people who are at a higher level can make decisions that basically kill whatever's taken place at the local level. And that's one of our concerns. If there is a person, elected person somewhere in the state of Indiana that's benefited from gerrymandering, they're not going to be inclined to want to go ahead and release that. That's why I think when it's bipartisan and you look at trying to make sure that the focus is making sure that the people who are being served have an opportunity to have a decision on those with to whom serve them, I think that's always going to be the best route to travel. And then to make sure that once those decisions are made, that the understanding is that at that grassroots level, it's been bipartisan and it's something worth serving up to the next level, which is the state level, to hopefully get some action done.
You are not the first person I have heard use the G word, that being gerrymandering. Do you believe that that's the case? Do you believe that the way we do it now leads to districts being drawn in such a way that particular parties benefit one way or the other?
Well, I think that the way they exist now has that unnecessary or that unfortunate effect. But the reality of it is that when somebody can point to the law and say, we're just following the rules, then I think that's when we need to go ahead and do a little bit closer scrutinization of those rules. And as it stands right now, again, some of these things have been done for decades. They've been in place for decades and the population has shifted. I mean, some of these areas now are so remote because the population base has gone to some area around a more metropolitan area that they do need to be revisited. And I think this is the best way to get that conversation started. And again, it doesn't happen very often. It does not happen very often. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, when you look at trying to make sure that people that live and work and play in this state need to have an active voice in what goes on in this state, I think that the better representation that they can have as it is relevant to where they live is critically important.
I looked at a number of states this morning and there are a few more than 20 that have commissions of some sort. Only 6 do it in a nonpartisan way. In most cases, it's bipartisan with majority rule. Mm-hmm. And so what you're talking about in that case, this goes back to what you were saying about bipartisan versus nonpartisan. There is still the opportunity for the party in power to be able to draw the lines if there's a deadlock, if you can't come to some sort of agreement. And, I mean, as we're seeing with the Supreme Court right now and other ways, there are plenty of ways to wind up with a deadlock that still don't actually change anything for the better. So wouldn't it be better to have the nonpartisan commission completely separate from the people who are in office to say, we believe that this is the way the population sets up. We believe this is the way to draw compact districts, which is in state law, something you absolutely have to do. Districts that perhaps cross fewer county lines. So it's more clear that if you're in this part of the county, it doesn't matter if you're in this part of the county or that part of the county, you're voting for the same person. Isn't it better to have people who are completely apart from this do this job rather than someone who has any sort of a stake in it? Wouldn't you rather have someone who takes the 30,000-foot view because it does come back down to how it affects the locals because it affects how you're represented at the State House?
Completely. Like I said earlier, I think that we need to look at what we're trying to accomplish here and to whom we're trying to have that accomplishment be presented to. And Again, I could be wrong. I often am wrong, but my belief system is that if it's bipartisan, then there are people who are going to be representative of both political parties, and it sort of empowers the argument because you will have the equality of representation in the debate, and then that understanding will be what's been taken on the folks that are going to be in the eventual run of the decision. The fact of the matter that because of the gerrymandering that we're living in right now could skew that balance, I don't know. I mean, if we establish a specific number and require equality on either side of the political spectrum, it might end up being a better debate.
We talk about bipartisanship, and of course, this is a country that's got two major political parties that control the lion's share of things, but it seems to me there would be people who would say, wait, I don't belong to either of those two parties, and I want representation too. Wouldn't it be better to have multi-partisan indeed and as you get to multi-partisan, it seems like the logical extension of that is non-partisan. So you talk to people who say, I don't belong to any of these ideologies. I believe that what I'm looking at is a map. Isn't it better to try to represent people who are outside also of the Democratic and Republican parties?
Well, there is, but I mean, let's take for example the presidential election. You know, basically there's going to be two major parties that are represented, two major candidates from those parties. And generally speaking, because people value their vote, I think that they have a tendency towards siding with the party that's more in line with what they believe.
Although you only have to go back to 1992 or 96 to find an election that had a major third party even for the presidency.
Yeah, and that's why I said generally.
So, I mean, you've got times where there are people who are not in one of the two parties who make a difference.
But then you also have times where they do. And so the fact of the matter is that – and then let's even split hairs further, Stan. Then where do you draw the line? I mean, then you basically do go to the point of it being bipartisan because there's no longer going to be the necessary – I mean, it'll be so subdivided that it'll be, you know, like almost any port in the storm. But what we're dealing with is an issue that's very political. It's a very strong political issue. And generally speaking, in the state of Indiana, the two-party representatives are the ones that are getting the most challenges. They're the ones where they feel, you know, with a great big loop that goes up the spine of the state and circles around and goes into the middle and then goes all the way to the west. Who does that represent, you know? And I think that it would be beneficial. I mean, first off, absolutely beneficial to have this conversation and to get that issue revisited. And second off, to do it in such a way that it's going to be based on equal input from both parties that goes up the food chain to make sure that they understand they've got buy-in on both sides of the issue.
Last question, and I promise I'll move away from this.
I bet you won't.
You've talked about the idea of gerrymandering, and I want to talk about how you think people in your city are being represented in the State House and in Congress. If you went to a commission format, any sort of format, bipartisan, nonpartisan, whatever, mm-hmm. do you think that that commission would do a better job of representing the interests of West Lafayette citizens were such a commission in place? Because of how people would then be elected and how those districts would be drawn.
Right. I'm always going to default back to the original concept of how we do what we do in West Lafayette. Generally speaking, we try and get as much community and citizen input as we can on these major big issues. And we don't toll. We don't say, okay, who are you with? What's your party affiliation? It's general. And you know, sure, we know some of our ongoing, you know, we deal with a lot of the same people during a lot of our public meetings. And we know where they stand on almost all issues. But the fact of the matter is that we are public servants. You know, we serve the public. And I would hope that once you get elected to office, that whatever that brand that you were elected under doesn't become the driving force for every decision that you make. I mean, we wouldn't have had the success that we've had in West Lafayette if I was, you know, going to stick to some doctrine that says, okay, if this is the decision parameters, you need to choose this way because of your party affiliation.
Although it is pretty well acknowledged that on the local level, that is seen that way. And on the state house or congressional level, it is seen a very different way where ideology matters a lot more.
And therein lies the problem with what we're dealing with sometimes statewide and specifically countrywide. The fact of the matter is that usually when you talk to somebody at the grassroots level, when you're knocking on doors saying, hi, my name's John, pick me, please. Their issues are local. They're very local and they don't care. I mean, rarely have I been turned away because of my party affiliation. Oftentimes, it's a debate on whether we've done something right or whether we've done something wrong. But then you're right. Once it gets to that higher level, that seems to be basically the primary focus. And maybe that's because that's how these people that go to that level obtain success. Maybe they become the standard bearer for their party, and that's where they get that groundswell support by the folks that share that same view, and it just goes up the political food chain. That's one of the good things about local politics. We are here to serve.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Today's talk is with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love to have your questions for him. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. You mentioned just a second ago not being turned away because of your party affiliation. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have to ask this question because we're talking in the same week that Super Tuesday happened. Mm. It seems clearer and clearer that Donald Trump has a good path towards the Republican nomination for president, and you, at least nominally, share a party with this guy. Mm-hmm. What does that do for you as a local Republican? Do people look at you and say, you share a party with Mr. Trump, and therefore I feel one way or another? Does it change anything about the way that you or Republicans in general are seen, do you think?
Well, I don't know, because I know that most of the folks that I work for, they know what I am. They know I'm a West Side guy, and they've known me for a long time, and hopefully they approve of what we've been able to do. Mr. Trump is a unique guy, regardless of his party affiliation. I don't think, in all honesty, just based upon what I've been exposed to through this campaign season, I don't know that he is going to be asking a whole lot of people within the party for any guidance on some of his decisions. He seems to be a pretty independent thinking kind of guy.
And it seems clear that Republicans don't necessarily want him to be their nominee, at least at the upper levels of the party.
There's a lot of head shaking going on now, I would presume, at the, at those levels about what the future of this country is in the event that some that somebody like Mr. Trump might get elected. Because, again, we groom some of these people. They come up through a system, kind of like what we were talking about a little bit earlier, and they have a level of predictability about them. At least they have a track record of how they vote. They have a track record of how they serve. Mr. Trump doesn't necessarily have that. He's got a track record of working in the private sector, which is a completely different rule book on how to run things. But, you know, when I first ran, I mean, the fact that I was a Republican was pretty relevant. There were a lot of folks who said, you know, never voted for a Republican, never will. But then as I started proving to them that I was a West Side guy first and I care passionately about my community, I've lived here for over 50 years, I love this place, I think some of that started rolling away.
Although, so let me ask you about that for a second, because
sure.
You have told this story many times, and essentially...
Am I boring you?
No, but I want to remind people of it, because the answer, I have had many people ask me, how/why is John Dennis a Republican? And the answer, it seems to me, is a Republican asked you to run who mm-hmm. said, we have a spot on the ballot for our party, would you please take that spot? And your answer was, sure, I'll do this. But you did it without an eye to political ideology. Mm-hmm. You did it with an eye to get the mayor's office and try mm-hmm. to do something with that. So that being the case, if you look at it from that way, then Donald Trump, who's got a national party scope mm-hmm. to look at the way that Republicans are seen, you don't identify with any of these ideologies anyway. You step out of line with the Republican Party time and time again. You've done mm-hmm. it on gay marriage. You've criticized mm-hmm. the governor on RFRA. Mm-hmm. Doesn't this speak to the need to you to redefine who you are politically?
I don't think so, because nobody's challenging me politically. And so
I am.
Far,
well, I'm challenging you politically.
Where do you live?
Not in your city.
There you go, Stan. I can't help you out, buddy. You got to call your county commissioner.
That's the beauty of having the bully pulpit of the transmitter, you see.
Yes.
I get to ask you these questions
without
having to answer to you as my mayor.
Yes, you do. But here's the thing. You know, I know that when I made the decision to run for elected office, I had absolutely no political pedigree. To say that I was naive would be an understatement. But the fact of the matter is that what I have done all of my life is I've been a public servant all of my life, all of my adult life. So whenever the conversation comes to political affiliation, it shocks me because I don't understand, and probably deliberately more than anything else, but I don't recognize the reality of having this polarization between political parties when the fact of the matter is that we basically, in a very generic way, we basically try to provide services to the people that we work for. So if I'm not Republican enough for some folks within the Republican Party, well, I apologize. If I should be a Democrat, but I'm not because I'm a Republican and people want me to be a Democrat, well, that's not going to happen either, and I apologize. But one thing that I am is that I'm a public servant with a lot of years of experience, and I am working in the community that I love. And hopefully, because of that mantra, because of the fact that I don't have to look at a checklist to say, okay, this is what Republicans do, I can look at my community and say, this is what they want me to do, I can sleep well at night.
Are you embarrassed to share a party with Donald Trump?
There's a lot of things about Donald Trump that embarrasses me, not just his party affiliation. Let's just leave it at that.
We've got a few more minutes with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis on Ask the Mayor today here on WBAA. Call in your questions to 496-1999. Email them to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. I had an interesting conversation last month with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and we mentioned you being out in front of gay marriage and mm-hmm. criticizing the governor on RFRA. And he got a call on our show from a young woman who said, hey, Mr. Mayor, I hear you talking about wanting to attract professional young people to mm-hmm. Frankfort. And this is something I've talked about with Mayor McBarnes and mm-hmm. with Mayor Barton down in Crawfordsville, something that a lot of people obviously want to do. It's a very attractive demographic to try to go after. Mm-hmm. And she said, why don't you try to enact an LGBT rights ordinance in mm-hmm. Frankfurt as a way to attract young people? And his response was, well, I really haven't gotten that many. I really haven't gotten any calls about it. And I said, well, now you've gotten a call about mm-hmm. it on this show. And he kind of dodged around it a little bit and didn't seem to want to lead on it. And this is an area where you've been out in front of things. Oh, you've yeah. been outside of what a lot of people in the party think. Mm-hmm. What would you say to Mayor McBarnes about whether this is an issue that he should try to lead on or whether he should try to fall in line with what is, let's face it, a fairly conservative establishment around him?
Mm-hmm. Well, the reality of it is that when you look at people, you should look at them as just people. And we have learned over the spectrum of our history that there's a lot of folks that are being mistreated. And there's a lot of folks that have been treated horribly throughout their personal history. And there's a lot of folks that do need the help of government, regardless at what level, whether it be at the feds or all the way down to the local level. They need our help to be able to have a high quality of life. And I'm pretty passionate about that stuff. And the fact of the matter is that if you're in a position to enable somebody to have a higher quality of life just by making a public statement or being on, if Chris hasn't had a lot of people challenging him when it comes to the diversity issue, maybe it is time he takes that first step to see maybe that would be a welcome conversation to have. Not necessarily starting, you know, an ordinance or doing as much as we've had here in West Lafayette, but sometimes by opening up that dialogue, by having that conversation, it will empower him to have a little bit more awareness of the circumstances or situations that might be going on there. I know from my experiences on both sides of the river, the fact of the matter was that 30 years ago, those conversations were basically kept in, you know, certain bars or certain lounges or other places than the public sector. But as we've sort of evolved as a population, those are becoming more and more publicly acceptable. And those conversations are now influencing policy, which I think is a good idea. But the fact of the matter is that you've got to have a comfort level within your population that you serve. And that comfort level cannot be attained until you've had that preliminary conversation. And again, Chris is right. There might be, you know, he might open up a conversation about it and hear nothing but crickets chirping in the background.
Well, it sounds like what you might also be saying is if you were he, you would listen to the people of Frankfurt and try to determine what the will of the people is on this. Is that what you're saying?
In a way, but I think the conversation has to be had first. You know, the whole conversation was based upon attracting young talent. Attracting and retaining young talent. And we now know, and again, Chris is a lot closer to that young talent age than I am, but what we now know is that public policy really should be something that's based upon that first definer right there, which is the public. And that societally, we have shifted a lot of the morals that were basically started when our parents were running stuff. And I think that the kids that are being that are graduating from college now, the people who are entering the workforce now, look at things completely differently than we did. And I'm a generation away from you, and my parents, of course, are gone now, but they would have a completely different opinion about this. But they're smarter than we are. They're more tolerant than we are. They're less prejudiced than we are. They don't carry some of the social baggage that we did. They're not the type that would look at an image of something and immediately make a judgmental statement. So in a way, yeah, have that dialogue. But in a way, like most things and most politicians, we generally drive the dialogue. We try and take it to a place where we're going to get some good, solid information from it. But the fact of the matter is that if we truly, I know here in West Lafayette, we are banking on our future. I mean, we are banking heavily on our future. And we want to make sure that when we start developing some of these great things that are going to come to our community, we want to bring the best and the brightest to our community to start in our school systems, to start in our university, and to finish by going to work in our community.
So what can a mayor like Mayor McBarnes learn from what's happened here? Because one of the things I'm thankful to him for is he asked me on the program last month, he said, how many cities have these sorts of ordinances? Mm-hmm. And so in our last couple of minutes of the show, I went and looked it up. And it turns out there are something like a dozen or a little more than a dozen that have an ordinance like the city of West Lafayette does mm-hmm. that protects both sexual orientation and gender identity. It's a fairly broad ranging ordinance mm-hmm. that your city has, one of the broadest out there mm-hmm. in the state. What could you tell Mayor McBarnes about how that discussion was had here and how he might be able to approach it in a pro-leadership fashion in Frankfurt such that he could do what the caller was asking him to do, which is lead on behalf of mm-hmm. young professionals?
Well, first off, obviously, I got to throw the caveat out there. He is doing a great job. He's a good guy and he's a good mayor and he really is a good public servant. But the fact of the matter is that if we approach this from the perspective that he is inquiring, that he needs to know more, then definitely he needs to have those conversations with his community. To lead those conversations is by hosting them himself. And again, not to get into a bunch of stuff, but we do that with almost everything. We have strategic plans. We when we're looking at doing parks, when we're looking to do it roads, when we're looking at doing developments, when we're looking at social policy within our community, we have those conversations, and sometimes they're very uncomfortable. You know, we've had some council meetings where, whether it be the city supporting a faith-based organization or whether it be changing our LGBT policy, where people have been very passionate and very vocal about their opinion and very condemning of me because of my position on some of these issues. So they're very difficult. But if you've taken that leadership role, if you're the boss, then you need to act like one, and you need to go ahead and sort of sometimes kind of get into those areas that are difficult and uncomfortable. And honestly, Chris is a good guy, and he's a smart guy. And I think that taking a leadership role is intuitive to him. I mean, look what he's accomplished in such a very short period of time. And just to do that fact-finding, just to figure out, you know, what is it? What is the flavor of our community? What is it that we want? And then use that as a springboard to conceivably have further conversations and discussions about what can be done when it comes to using that information to recruit businesses and young talent.
Obviously, you weren't a mayor when you were his age. but do you think it's easier for someone like you who had a career before you were in politics mm-hmm. Than it is for somebody like him whose only job has been mayor of Frankfort, Indiana mm-hmm. to have these sorts of conversations or to have the gumption, frankly, to start them and know that they are going to be uncomfortable?
Well, I think about when I was his age, I was a police officer over in Lafayette in a squad car, and I was dealing with issues in those days that were completely unfamiliar to me, totally unfamiliar. You know, growing up in West Lafayette, a lot of what I was exposed to in Lafayette, it was completely new. And to use an old adage, you sort of adapt and overcome. And I think that Chris is in that process now where he's in a position to be able to do that. You know, you look at your community, you want to compare your community to the greatest communities in the country. And a lot of those great communities have a fairly open-minded approach to how they're going to drive their local economy and how they're going to contribute to the greater economy. And diversity really shouldn't – it's kind of unfortunate that we use diversity as sort of a tagline for development. But the fact of the matter is that Chris's generation and then the generation following Chris, these issues, they're probably going to laugh at us for having these kind of conversations. They're going to think, really? You guys actually had to legislate people being nice to each other? But the fact of the matter is that it's something that in I'm sure it's unusual to him. But I think that, again – in his experience and what he's done with his life so far, this would be an excellent opportunity for him to really grow his community.
All right. Well, thanks for talking so much about leadership with us today. We'll look forward to having this conversation again next month.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Be sure to tune in next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. And remember, all these conversations are archived online at our website. That's WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership. And Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com.